welcome to episode 54 of the Extra Sequential podcast hosted out of Perth, Western Australia. My name's Mladen.
My name is Chris, and we're talking about comics, graphic novels, manga, and films, and pop culture stuff, and that.
The sky is the limit, some might say. Today,
we have a theme, and it is it's a bit of a messy theme. It's kind of hard to kind of rein in, I guess, hard to define, but inspired by cowboys and aliens, which is itself based on a comic that no one really knows about.
Yeah.
We thought we'd look at genre mashups, comics that take two different tropes from two or three different genres and kind of put them in one hearty stew.
That's a good working definition because I came to a similar conclusion, but I think we intentionally kept ourselves apart for this topic so we would see what we would come up with because it's a budding genre of its own, really. But we'll get into that more later in the show after the news.
What you just heard was a few seconds of some hardcore heavy music from 1994, used in, I don't know what era it's from, obviously it's made new, but it's for the DC Comics ad that will be showing in cinemas. We don't know if it's going to be showing at cinemas here in Australia or just America, but it's basically to get the September relaunch of the entire superhero line out into the general masses. So there's ads for comics at your local cinema. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
What isn't cool, perhaps, is the ad itself. It's got good and bad things about it. You've seen it, haven't you?
I think the ad will probably generate lots of laughter in an audience rather than the expected response they're going for, which I think is, "God, that was so cool." That's mouth breathing, in case you
I don't think it's lame or laughable. I just don't think it lives up to the potential. Basically, we'll put the link on the site, and it's basically slow motion comics with this kind of heavy metal lights music running throughout it all. There's no voiceover. There's no sound effects as such. It's basically shots of Superman lifting a guy above his head and Aquaman throwing a spear at a van and Wonder Woman deflecting spears with a bracelet. It's all done in a slow motion comic style. Mm. Basically, there's a 30-second ad, and there's also a 2-minute ad. Basically, it's a good idea because basically I've said basically a lot, haven't I?
Yeah.
Your local comic shop is able to put their text at the end of each
script. They're doing this again, though, where they're forcing the retailers to advertise it themselves because that means the retailers would have to pay to get it shown on local TV, correct?
I think they pay 25% of the cost to put their own name in it. So they show 30 seconds of this slow motion comics with Superman and Batman, Green Lantern, Flash, other characters that people will know. And then it's just text saying, get your new 52 number one issues from Curmudgeon-y Comics just around the corner from this very cinema.
Yeah. It's kind of sad that it takes like a big, huge overhaul for them to start thinking lateral commercial opportunities. I mean, they should have been doing, pre-cinema adverts long, without having to resort on this big event thing. Why didn't, I know it's Marvel, but, Marvel Civil War should have been showing ads in front of movies. That would have made a big deal. The death of Batman shown, in front of a major movie, even if it's just a motion trailer for a comic, I think would have... I mean, how could that hurt?
And true, then, but I don't think cinema is the best place to advertise.
Really?
I mean, it's like 2 hours later, what are people going to do with that information? They're not going to remember the adverts. You never remember the ads you see before the cinema. But I think there has been motion comics and comic inserts in DVDs and video games and stuff nowadays, which Marvel and DC do pretty heavily, and they do video game tie-in comics, which I'd imagine they'd get a lot more bang for their buck. And a lot more interest. Yeah.
I think the key for these, these big commercial TV ad ventures and pre-movie trailers and so forth, it has to be repetition. You have to keep seeing that ad. Otherwise, as you mentioned, you don't remember it. I mean, I saw the Conan the Barbarian movie last night at the cinemas, and I don't think I remember any of the ads that came before. So.
I think it's quite cheap. It's surprisingly cheap to show ads in front of the cinema.
Yeah.
If I was showing them on TV, which would make a lot more sense, but it also cost astronomical amount.
Mm.
So I guess perhaps they're testing the waters with this.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes come September.
weeks away. Yeah, yeah, it's good on them for trying something new, but as you say, time will tell.
Moving on. Now, you may have heard that AMC, the studio behind Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, was interested in adapting Brian Wood's DMZ. It's a comic through Vertigo about a post sort of Civil War New York. It's a really great comic, but what happened is, AMC expressed interest, Brian Wood was pretty keen, and Warner Brothers declined. Now, Brian Wood explained how this works, luckily for us, on the CBR forums, and you should go over there if you want to chat with creators you like, because they'll lurk around there. But he said what DC does when you sign a Vertigo contract is they option the property up front and they pay an option fee. Not a huge one, but not a small one either. And that media option runs for as long as DC is publishing the books in most cases. So any movie or TV show deal is for Warner Brothers to make or not make. This is arguably the worst aspect of Vertigo since, as anyone can see, they have all these amazing books in their library and do absolutely nothing with 99.9999% of them. We've seen a lot of offers on both DMZ and Northlanders go whizzing by. And then he mentions the jokes on them because he's been contacted by other studios and networks who've asked him for similar original material so they don't have to run it past Warner Brothers. And this comes also at the time where Brian Woods just announced that he's leaving DC since DMZ's wrapping up and Northlanders got cancelled unceremoniously. I mean, how do you feel about his comments regarding the movie optioning through Vertigo? Do you think Warner Brothers are being a bit too protective with these licenses?
So, why is he angry at Warner Brothers? Because they kind of put a stop to the interest?
Basically,
and he doesn't know why.
Because he doesn't. Well, they're holding out for some kind of a miraculous deal on all their properties. His point is, people are approaching and saying we will make and this. You know, it's a quality outfit, AMC. It's not like some 2-bit. Yeah. You know, made for TV X-Men New Mutants movie. Remember that one?
Yes.
Yes. That's a Generation X. Yeah. No, this is like a proper outfit, and Warner Brothers are just turning that down, probably because of money reasons. And I can see how that'd be very frustrating for a creator who signed up for what they believed was a creator owned imprint like Vertigo.
True. Who knows what they're thinking?
Yeah. That's unfortunate news. I'm a fan of Brian Wood, but I'm glad that he'll be pursuing more of his own creator-owned work with, I think Dark Horse is one of those. But we'll talk about Brian Wood in another couple of episodes. Got any other news items this week, Chris?
The ASA, the Australian Society of Authors, is holding a masterclass for those interested in knowing more about or creating comics. Colleen Doran, who's done Sandman work, A Distant Soil. She's the guest speaker, and it'll be held in Sydney on November 19 and 20. So if you're Sydney around the time, or even if you're not, you can check out the ASA, Australian Society of Authors, website. If you haven't heard, and spoiler alert, I was going to mention this last week, but I thought it would give people a chance to read the comics. Hellboy is no more. Hellboy is dead.
What you say? Really?
Yeah, Hellboy the Fury number 3 featured his death, which I haven't read, but I knew it was coming. Mike Mignola has been pretty upfront about it, and to quote him, "I've been planning this one for a long time." Well, sort of. Almost from the beginning of Hellboy, I knew that if the series went on long enough, I would eventually kill him. I didn't know exactly how or when, but I figured that when the time was right, I'd know. I actually did kill him off in the middle of the island, which is a miniseries from a while ago, but it didn't take. It just wasn't quite his time yet. Dark Horse have been promoting 2012 as the year of Hellboy. So quite a lot of stuff has happened to Hellboy. We know Hellboy is played by Ron Perlman in the movies, the Red Paranormal Investigator, and there will be no Hellboy 3 film, by the way, because Guillermo del Toro is just far too busy. Hellboy the Fury number 3, which I think came out last week by Mike Mignola and Duncan Fragrido. So yeah, there will be more Hellboy tales, not only prequels like set in the past and stuff, which, you know, set in the 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever, which they have been doing for quite some time, but there will also be Hellboy in Hell stories coming. So he'll meet up with apparently his parents, and he meet up with Abe Sapien, who I didn't realize was dead
I didn't know he was dead.
So I'm not a regular reader of Hellboy. Now's the time to pick it up.
That's kind of cool that he would go, okay, it's ending, Here you go.
Yeah, and it's not a, it's not a, that's my phone ringing in the background. It's
professionals.
It's not a, something just to get attention or whatever, and it's interesting that it hasn't been something that's just been promoted in like the New York Times or the LA Times or whatever. He's actually just going through the comic websites and whatnot.
Good on him.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Only have one other piece, and this is for residents of South Carolina, in Columbia specifically. There's a con called ColaCon, which is combining two of my favorite things, Chris. Do you know what they are?
Coke and con men.
Wrong, but a good guess nonetheless. Comics and hip-hop.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah, and exploring the way comics and other forms of sequential art explore hip-hop. So there'll be guest artists, you know, and there'll be very some well-known hip-hop artists there, like Talib Kweli, Katra Key, Sanford Green, and a few other – sorry, Sanford Green's an artist. I think I've mixed up my notes here. But, yeah, they've got a wide plethora of artists contributing as well. So if you're – in Columbia, South Carolina, head down on September the 2nd to the ColaCon. Yeah, I'd love to go. That's like my two favorite things.
Yeah, nice one. Lastly, Ridley Scott is directing a Blade Runner sequel or prequel. Have you heard about this?
I have.
you sound hesitant. I don't know how confirmed this is, and I highly doubt that Harrison Ford will be in it. But we also know that he's filming at the moment Prometheus, which is the alien film.
Yeah, so is that having anything to do with aliens, or have they said it's not to do with aliens?
It was announced as an alien prequel, a prequel to the first film. Like, I think it was set 30, 40 years before, so no Sigourney Weaver or anything. And it was going to focus on the space jockey, which was the big...
Mm-hmm.
massive giant sitting behind the cannon that we saw in the first film from the late 1970s. And then they said, actually, no, once we started developing the script, we started our own mythology and we're going to call it Prometheus. But then shots that have been seen look very close to Giga's designs and stuff. So I would say, is it an alien film or is it not? They're kind of playing it coy. So that's kind of interesting. And apparently Blade Runner did have a couple of sequels in books written by a guy called K.W. Jeter, was apparently a friend of Philip K. Dick, and they were published in 1995 and 2000.
Okay.
Blade Runner 2, The Edge of Human, Blade Runner 3, Replicant Night, and Blade Runner 4, Eye and Talon. So.
Yeah. I mean, the only Blade Runner spin-off that I've enjoyed has been the... There was a video game adaptation, and what they did rather than just make stuff up is they used a lot of the content from the original book inserted that into the game around a new character who wasn't Deckard, but he was also chasing replicants, so, you know, doing the same job. And that worked well because, you know, you could, and they looked like they belonged in the same world, do you know what I mean? And because he was basing it on Philip K. Dick's ideas. But, yeah, I mean, just do something new. I guess Robin Hood didn't work for him, so he's... Enough on that. You know, the one piece of news I was expecting you to bring up this week was Lois Lane's hair.
Yes, I was going to mention that, but I don't know if... I mean, who knows? Yeah, Amy Adams, who plays Lois Lane in the, 2013 film, Zack Snyder... the guy that directed 300 Watchmen and Sucker Punch, which I recently just saw and was disappointed by. He's doing the Superman reboot, filming at the moment. And, yeah, Lois Lane, played by Amy Adams, who's a natural redhead, is blonde.
A natural redhead. I'll correct you there. She's actually a natural blonde.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I've looked into this.
Oh, okay, weird that she's redhead in almost all her films. Lois Lane is obviously a classical brunette, so... this is the same film that we discussed last week, cast Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White,
the editor. Of the you revealed yourself to be an enormous racist last week when we discussed this.
On my own petard. So I guess perhaps they're going for a different look, or perhaps they just don't care, or who knows what they're thinking again.
Does it bother you at all? I mean, women do dye their hair in real life.
I guess I'm so close to Superman because it's the first film I saw. It's the first comic I really kind of fell in love with, and I've got an emotional attachment to these characters, perhaps because I don't have a girlfriend, so I need to, put my love into fictional characters. Maybe she's going undercover and she's dyed her hair.
Oh, my. You know, I had a similar conversation with someone once. I remember before The Dark Knight came out and they had the trailers showing that it was pretty, that he was going to get half his face burnt off instead of acid thrown at his face. And they were adamant that the scene in the trailer showing him in a pool of gasoline was actually just water and he was screaming due to some unrelated thing, because he was holding out hope and saying, Christopher Nolan would never change such a distinctive part of the character. Like, it doesn't matter, you know. But no, I mean, Lois Lane, yeah.
In the long run, it doesn't matter. And the more of these comic book films I've seen over the years, and the plethora that have been unleashed upon us in the last decade or so, I'm becoming less and less, you know.
And they changed Lana Lang's hair in Smallville.
Yeah, that's true. She was a redhead in the comics.
Didn't hear you whining then, did I?
No, I didn't really watch Smallville.
Yes, you did. You're a liar. Okay, we've exhausted the news, I think.
Yeah, I'm exhausted. Time for our nap.
Yes.
Everybody.
A few quick Brussels sprouts and then on to Mashup Comics.
So, Maladdin, how was the bare-chested barbarian in 3D coming at you?
I assume you are talking about the Conan the Barbarian extravaganza that I had the joy of watching.
Actually, I meant the Underground Fight Club.
I was looking pretty good. Thank you for asking, Chris.
Oil me up, baby. So how is Jason Momoa? Is he a good Conan?
He's quite the attractive man. I mean, yeah, he had the... he had the aggression going down, I guess. I mean, I'm a bit of a Conan fan, like Robert E. Howard novels, and I like some of the Marvel comics and stuff. So I kind of went in with not high hopes for this, but it turned out to be okay. It's on the same level as... did you ever watch Pathfinder?
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
Yeah, it's about as good as that. Actually, I kind of prefer Pathfinder a little bit more. But if you like that kind of super gory, there's lots of boobs in it, you know, the kind of things you expect in a Conan film, lots of quite a few creative deaths, and but I would really, really recommend to not see it in 3D if you can, because it looked bad. Like, a couple of bits worked, like in these kind of flashback bits, they did this grainy effect, so it looked like you were looking through parchment and through these layers of water at the events, and that actually looked really good in 3D. But I mentioned to you earlier that, like, yeah, Ron Perlman, who's Conan's dad, like, his mustache floats off his face in several scenes.
Yeah.
Several feet in front of his face in the 3D, amazing post-converted 3D effects. But, yeah, modest recommendation. If you're curious enough to see it, I think you won't be disappointed. If you weren't interested to begin with, it won't convince you otherwise. There we go.
Just see it in 3D.
Yeah, absolutely.
I saw the motion comic of Iron Man Extremis, based on the Warren Ellis, I think, and Addie Granoff. It was pretty good, actually. Marvel have done a few motion comic things lately. Hmm. So the next one I'm going to check out is Spider-Woman, Agent of S.W.O.R.D. But yeah, they're pretty good, better than the... I know, about on the same level as the DC cinematic ad.
Hmm.
Motion comics have come a long way, baby.
Very good. So that was the Iron Man Extremist?
Extremis.
Ah, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
Without the T.
Oh, okay. Good. All right.
Let's talk about genres and mashing them up.
Yeah, this was an interesting one when you suggested it to me, because, yeah, I haven't seen Cowboys. Is it Cowboys versus Aliens or Cowboys and Aliens?
And.
Like Cowboys and Indians, but Aliens. Gotcha. All right. Correct. And I assume neither of us have seen that, but, I mean, we're familiar enough with this... I guess it feels like a new genre, the mashup. And I mean, TV Tropes has a whole section devoted to it called Cool versus Awesome.
Okay.
But unfortunately, not many comic examples there. And after today's show, we'll have a lot more to suggest for them, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, it's this unusual thing where they pick two kind of awesome, well-known kind of, you mentioned cliches or tropes before, and kind of mash them together. I mean, I have my own opinions on this field. What do you think about it in general?
It can work. Like, usually it's kind of done when there's like two popular franchises or something. I guess the obvious one would be Alien versus Predator.
Yes.
But the comics, apparently, which started in like, what, 1991, I think, was the first Alien versus Predator comic. And heaps of them over the years. And
so
I remember
many.
Really liking Batman versus Predator and Superman versus Alien.
Man. On that topic, I have myself a little mini list here. I've got that aliens have fought Superman, Batman, Wildcats and Stormwatch, Green Lantern, Superman again, Batman again, Judge Dredd, and Predator has fought Batman, Magnus, Robot Fighter, Batman again, a bunch of Dark Horse characters, X, Ghost, Motorhead, and Agents of Law, Tarzan, Batman again, Judge Dredd, Superman, the Justice League of America, and you also have Aliens vs. Predator vs. Terminator, Aliens vs. Predator vs. Witchblade and the Darkness, and Superman and Batman vs. Aliens and Predator. So you could say they're milking this for all it's worth.
Yes, and there's currently Robocop vs. Terminator as well. It's interesting because that was most of those stuff were in the 90s when you had inter-company crossovers, which don't really happen as much anymore. But I do remember the Batman versus Predator ones are awesome.
Very violent from what I remember, as you would expect.
Yeah. And the one of the scenes I always remember from Superman versus Aliens was Superman heard a distress signal or something on one of these alien planets, so he went, but he was so far away from the sun, he started to lose his powers. On the way back to Earth, after he got attacked by an alien, he was impregnated with a chest burster.
Oh, wow.
So he was flying back to Earth and into our sun, which is where Superman gets his powers. It's essentially a solar battery. So he's getting his powers back, and the chest bird is starting to come alive and kind of beat on his chest, and Superman vomits. So he vomits out the chest burster in space, and it's just kind of floating. I thought, that is like the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, it's interesting to combine these superheroes with like a species which is really like a metaphor for face rape and, you know, sexual assault. So I feel they never quite explored that avenue of the mashup. But that's a prime example. That's probably the one that's most familiar to people, but these days it's more noticeable than ever. And generally I'd say I'm not a huge fan of this kind of cool versus awesome thing, because really it seems like a very cynical thing to do to kind of get people to say, oh, it's the best thing ever, and then, you know, take your money. So, like, you know, the Mr. Darcy vampire and Pride and Prejudice and zombies, you know, those novels that have come out recently?
Yes, yeah, I was going to mention them. But I think, you said that it's kind of a popularity, but it's interesting. Like, I was looking at some of the 40s and 50s films, like horror movies. We know, like, the Hammer horror films were quite big, and the Universal monsters, like your Frankenstein and Dracula, were quite big. Mm-hmm. So there was 1943, there was Frankenstein meets the Wolfman.
Yeah.
There was Abbott and Costello meets Wolfman.
That's
Alvin
a
and the Chipmunks meets the Wolfman. Three Stooges meet Hercules. Abbott and Costello also met Frankenstein, Wolfman, and the Invisible Man. And you said, as you said, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which was a book and a film that comes out next year, and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, both by Seth Graham Smith. So there's the... I guess there's two different versions where you take two different properties and mash them together.
Yeah.
And then you take two different genres and mash them together.
It's kind of this like this age-old thing. I'd be hard-pressed to nail down when the fur versus fang subgenre of, you know, vampires versus werewolves sprung up, because that has been around, as you mentioned, probably since the Hammer Horror days. And it feels like it's a – I guess it's a way to use the same cliches of one genre, but you make it seem new by putting it in a new context.
Yeah, but and Twilight has really taken that and put a romantic spinner, so I'm Team Jacob or Team Edward.
Yeah, it put it like a teen romance thing, because the sexual stuff was always in Dracula, so that's nothing new. But it just seems like the idea is more interesting than the execution with a lot of these. And it's kind of the challenge then is to think of ones which are actually good on their own merits. And I think it's because, they're trying... rather than writing an interesting story, the writers are just thinking of these cool words like zombie, vampire, robots, and then mashing it together with something that's very, very popular. Say, I'm not a fan of the Marvel Zombies thing, but that mashes up superheroes of zombies. And that's a pretty major one for comics, because superheroes are probably the most predominant genre in American comics. So it makes sense that superheroes mashed with other things would be a whole other... ball game, and there's actually quite a few things like that. Have you read Gotham Central before?
This I have not read much of it, but this is the series or that's cancelled now, but that was focusing on the cops in Gotham City.
Yeah, it was kind of like Law and Order meets Batman and Gotham City. And I think, is it Powers I'm thinking of that does a similar thing where it's about, it's like a cop show really, but everyone has superpowers. Is that the one? Yeah, yeah. And that's this kind of, that's another genre mashup of that type. And Gotham Central is a great comic on its own. That's one that makes it work because it plays the serious, this is a real thing line so perfectly. And then you have supervillains that they come up against. Yes. And those kind of ones work. And other ones which I don't think, you mentioned Batman versus Predator, and there's a few of those, and I'm guessing the one I read is the crappy one because I didn't like it. I mean, yeah, superheroes in a horror story somehow seem, they don't always work.
I think, DC don't do it anymore, unfortunately, but they used to do Elseworlds tales where you had Batman as Frankenstein, Batman as Dracula, there's like the Victorian Age, Justice League of America.
Those were always I thought those were like really well done. Example.
Yeah.
And your favorite one for a lot of people would be Batman versus Dracula.
Yes.
By Doug Moink. Was it Munch? Moink? I don't know.
Yeah, one of those.
And Kelly Jones.
Yep.
And that works really well. And it's one of those comics that you think sounds incredibly dumb and, you know, it is in its own way. But it plays on the Hammer horror. It basically mashes up Batman into a Hammer horror movie. And it's pretty pitch perfect. You've read those, I'm sure.
I have, and I think the wonderful thing, Batman is one of the few characters that can make this work because he can be a sci-fi hero hanging out in the moon with, you know, gods in spandex. He can be a detective. He can be a horror. He can be a vigilante.
Mm.
He's such a malleable character.
I think because he doesn't have powers, I think that adds a lot to it. Because he's a guy who's picked a... He's kind of like, not like the Shadow. The Shadow has powers, but his goal is fighting crime, you know, and he's had a traumatic experience. And if you include those things and the kind of bat motif, you've basically got a Batman story and you can change just about anything else. So he's a pretty malleable character. Whereas kind of, I think in the list I mentioned Green Lantern versus Predator, and that does not seem right somehow.
No.
But Elseworlds, there's so many good examples. I'm a fan of, well, you know, I like Ted McKeever, and he did it's not a series, but he did like three sort of one-shots with Jean-Marc Lofficier, Randy Lofficier, and Roy Thomas, which were all kind of spin-offs of DC heroes set in a kind of German expressionistic cinema.
Yep, I remember these.
Yeah, Superman Metropolis was the first one. There's Batman Nosferatu. And then there's Wonder Woman, Blue Amazon, and they all kind of play on, you know, the kind of tropes of Metropolis, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, Nosferatu, Dr. Mobius the Gambler, and one other I can't recall at the moment. But that's a genre mashup that has, like a lot of the Elseworlds tales, it has a lot of appeal. And when they love both genres, I think it's when they work the most. It's when they don't particularly care for one genre, say maybe more Mr. Darcy Vampire, which I am told is garbage by someone whose opinion I trust. that seems like they did not like the kind of Jane Austen genre, but they liked the vampire genre. But you know, you've got to have a like for both to make it work. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Yeah. I was thinking of films that have that balance well.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked earlier about comedy. I mean, it's kind of ruling that out because comedy can fit into any genre, really.
Yeah, satire and parody are very kind of close to this whole genre mashup thing. And because we already covered, I think, parody in a previous episode, I think we should, avoid doubling up.
Yeah, but regardless, I'm just going to
go for it.
Ignore that. And I just thought a couple of ones that mix comedy and horror quite well are the Evil Dead films and also Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which came out recently, which if you see the trailer online, it's pretty awesome. But it's basically these two hillbillies, which are harmless and lovable characters, get mistaken for psycho killers by these kind of paranoid college students, and then they end up trying to kill these two guys but kill themselves. And yeah, if you see the trailer, it's pretty fun. It's called Tucker and Dale versus Evil. It's kind of, it takes the comedy element and it takes what you expect from the horror film, typical hillbilly slasher in the woods,
yeah,
and
yeah.
really does spin it on its head very well. I was thinking Ghostbusters does the same with the supernatural.
Yeah, it's genuinely scary at times, Ghostbusters. Like,
That librarian goes, shh, that always used to freak me out.
Yeah.
Red Dwarf, Galaxy Quest with comedy sci-fi.
Yeah, Galaxy Quest is a good example because that's actually a...
Could be a parody, really.
I was thinking about it, but it is actually... it does have a science fiction premise behind it, the fact that these aliens have stumbled upon these broadcast episodes of a Star Trek-esque show, and it's inspired their entire culture to the point where they just replicated it, you know, and that plays on science fiction fandom, you know, copying the show you like, and it also is a science fiction idea. So that is one that isn't just a parody of Star Trek. It's a it kind of comments on it. I find that that's a really good film if people haven't seen it. You might ignore it, see it on the shelf and go, it looks like crap, but I'd recommend it.
It is very fun. It is really good. And then I thought a couple of kind of something that takes kind of the tropes of the independent film and mixes that with sci-fi. Might not agree with me, but two names, Donnie Darko and Moon. They're kind of sci-fi independent movies.
Yes. I mean, Moon is really it's a low-budget science fiction film, but... what do you mean by independent sort of tropes?
Well, they're not epic, and they're kind of, they're like, is it real? Did it really happen? It's a very small cast. It's kind of, like I said, it's low budget, especially Donnie Darko, even though it does have elements of time travel and, you know, alternate kind of realities.
That's interesting. Donnie Darko, I definitely agree with you. They play time travel into this kind of disenfranchised teenager independent, you know, trope, really. I mean, that's something you see a lot of. But Moon, I like a lot of 70s science fiction, and that film really draws on films like, say, Silent Running, kind of films of small casts which have kind of lofty ideas, and that's what Moon, I think, was going for more so.
I also thought that Star Wars came to mind because I think originally, if I'm not mistaken, it was pitched as a Western in space when George Lucas was trying to sell the idea.
Yeah.
It was pretty out there. You know, nobody knew what a Wookiee was or, a lightsaber or a Jedi Knight. He basically said, look, it's a Western in space.
That's how he kind of filmed it, didn't he? I know originally he'd been long in planning to do a Flash Gordon movie, and the theory is that he kind of recycled his ideas for the Flash Gordon film into Star Wars. Not the plots, but I guess the aesthetic, as you mentioned, the Western in space, which Flash Gordon, you know, oftentimes is, you know, the kind of laser gun fighting.
Yeah, you've got Darth Vader, the guy in black. The bad guys in cowboy films are always in black. The good guys in white, they're trying to rescue the girl, the princess.
There's other things in there too, especially kind of Japanese film influences in there, because it draws not heavily, but the plot is basically the same plot as The Hidden Fortress, which is an Akira Kurosawa film. Yes. And even down to C-3PO and R2-D2 there's two peasant characters which fill those exact same roles in that film, and Darth Vader's helmet, you know, draws on the samurai thing. It's a weird kind of mishmash of all these different things. You're right, it's like a mashup film of these things which are kind of familiar, but then different, like there's a spin on them. Like the World War II outfits, you know, it's a war movie. The planes, like cockpits are like,
bomber planes.
Yeah, exactly. There's always things in there. That's a really good example of a mashup, Chris. Well done.
Thank you.
I'm not trying to be patronizing.
Before we talk about comics, a couple of other films I did want to mention. There was a Buffy musical episode called Once More with Feeling, that people remember. Hancock, the Will Smith film. The trailer pitched it as a comedy, and then when people saw it, they were surprised that the second half just made a quick switch to drama. Shaun of the Dead is an obvious one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A zombie romantic comedy. I thought Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the comic and the film, could kind of be a romance, action, adventure.
Yeah, that's kind of I think of that in the same vein almost as Donnie Darko, but to an extreme. Like, it's the same kind of disenfranchised youth tale of love lost and won and all that, and then this craziness. The video game tropes. Yeah, it's a good one.
Attack the Block, which is an English film.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, which looks pretty awesome and stars Nick Frost, Simon Pegg's often acting partner, the more heavy-set gentleman. It's basically a bunch of hoodies versus a bunch of invading aliens. And we had the Japanese have done a whole bunch of these, Alien versus Ninja, Sukiyaki Western Diango, The Good, the Weird, and the Bad, which I think you've seen.
It's a Korean film. That's really awesome. That's a great one, yeah.
And Outlander, which was kind of a sci-fi film but set in the past, stars James Caviezel. He played I don't know if you've seen this one. It stars Ron Perlman as well, I think.
When you said it, I immediately thought of the Sean Connery science fiction film called Outland, yes, but that's not it.
One.
Yeah.
But a more recent one where basically he's a he travels back in time and he basically brings this creature with him, and it's actually a really good movie. I think it went straight to DVD here, but it's pretty good. There's Paper Cuts, the kind of all ages publisher, also have printed Hardy Boys Voices Zombies and Nancy Drew Vampire Slayer. Abby, who on Facebook mentioned Space Pirates and Zombies, appropriately known as SPAZ, which apparently is a PC game on Steam, but I don't know anything.
Yeah, it looks like a kind of space warfare strategy game, like in the.
Yes. And a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Old City Blues.
Yes.
Which is like a sci-fi, but with a manga approach to its kind of storytelling.
It's basically Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's really a mashup as such, but it takes two interesting approaches and puts them together.
Mm.
Let's talk about comics more specifically. Cowboy Ninja Viking is a series that came out, I think it's only released about 9 issues so far from Image Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually pretty good. It's written by AJ Lieberman, who did some Batman comics over the last few years. And I think he also wrote Term Life, an original graphic novel. And the art is by Riley Rossmo. And basically, this trade collects the first 5 issues of the series. And it focuses on this guy called Duncan, who's what they call a triplet, who's basically like a guinea pig in the psychological experiment to make the ultimate covert agents.
Mm-hmm.
So they take people that have multiple personality disorder and use those personalities and kind of mold them to their advantage. So the guy that created this technique is a doctor called Sebastian Ghislaine, and he's basically been put in charge and getting together the best multiple personality disorder sufferers, patients, and basically they who have 3 kind of personalities, distinct personalities. Unfortunately, the whole experiment, as most government kind of experiments do, fails. A bad guy kind of discovers that these guys have kind of latent abilities and turns them into assassins. So CNV, Cowboy Ninja Viking, he's the guy that's got to hunt down all the kind of rogue triplets and put an end to them. So he's basically Duncan. He's, as you can imagine, he's a cowboy, ninja, and Viking. And it's actually pretty interesting. The interesting thing about this is it's not a comedy as such. It's pretty wacky ideas. Mm. And it's one of those, I guess, like Cowboys and Aliens, it's the title kind of grabs you. So when Duncan, the lead character, is talking or thinking amongst himself, you'll see close-ups of the various personalities talking amongst themselves. So you'll have a shot of the cowboy making a comment, ninja. And it reminded me of that 90s sitcom Herman's Head, which you, I don't know, do you remember that?
I remember it starred the girl who plays Lisa. Oh, the lady who plays Lisa on Simpsons.
Yeah, and also Hank Azaria was in there as well, apparently. Mm-hmm. So two actors from The Simpsons. So it's actually pretty good. So that visual style is quite interesting. And then the speech bubbles, whenever he speaks, they have little symbols. So when the cowboy speaks, his speech bubble has an outline of a revolver. When the ninja speaks, it's a sword, a katana. And when the Viking speaks, it's an axe. So it's actually quite an interesting way of letting you know kind of who's speaking and which personality is making the comment.
Yeah.
And when he tracks down the other triplets, so the first guy he fights is a cross between a gladiator, a pirate, and a oceanographer. So he's got this old, like, 50s diving suit on with a big helmet and whatnot. So it's an interesting idea. And the guys that wrote the film Zombieland, starring Woody Harrelson and Bill Murray, don't know if you've seen that film.
Yeah, stars the guy from Social Network. Can't remember his name now.
Jesse
Eisenberg, yeah.
It's actually pretty funny. So that's another horror comedy film, I guess. They're actually writing a screenplay of this. So the art style is actually pretty interesting. It's very frenetic. A lot of stuff happens. It takes a while to get to it, to find its feet. Like the first issue I found wasn't the best, but then after that it kind of really things start happening and you can definitely see it as a film.
Hmm.
Each issue has a focus on a different colour, So it goes from blue in the first issue, then pink, green, red, and yellow. So it's kind of a black and white comic with these colour overlays.
Huh.
And it's a very sketchy style, a lot of kind of Bendé dots and kind of loose sketching, kind of, you know, the duotone kind of approach. Like, it's not a clean and sharp style. But visually, like, just flicking through, I actually left this at work. I was reading it at lunch, and then I left it in the kitchen area, and I forgot about it. And my girl said, "Oh, you left this. It looks pretty interesting." And yeah, she's right. It's the visual style is pretty cool. So yeah, that's Cowboy Ninja Viking. So it's not, I guess it's not necessarily a genre mashup, but the lead character himself
is a genre mashup. Nice.
Yeah, and so he'll use, so all the, there's various, his personalities are very stereotypical.
Right.
So he, you know, the Viking just wants to kill everybody. The cowboy wants to sleep with everybody, and the ninjas, you know, kind of honor and stuff. So it kind of works in that way quite well. So yeah, I actually quite enjoyed it. It's been sitting on my must read pile for quite some time.
Wow.
So that's Cowboy Viking Ninja, available now from Image Comics.
You mentioned Cowboy there, and I know I've talked about it on a previous show, but Shaolin Cowboy.
Mm.
That's a mix of everything, basically. Yes. It's like this Ogami Ito character. That's Lone Wolf and Cub. That's the lone wolf of Lone Wolf and Cub. It's like that kind of character wandering around like Clint Eastwood through his desolate kind of Wild West, like deep down south, but punk pastiche. Yep. Environment, and there's these kind of demonic possession and these anime tropes of these superpowered fighters and these fights which last for so long, because there's this non-stop back and forth between these superpowered characters, which I think I have to lend you some books, because manga and anime even beat superheroes hands down for having long protracted fight scenes which last for far too long.
As anyone who's seen Dragon Ball Z will know, isn't like every episode like 20 minutes of fighting?
Yeah, a whole episode is just like one tiny part of the fight.
Well, you have been eating Brussels sprouts. So.
Oh, very good. You've been on the ball tonight, Chris. Very impressive. And yeah, I already mentioned the Ted McKeever ones, but if you're at all intrigued by that idea of the silent film slash Batman and Superman, absolutely grab Superman's Metropolis. It's, I don't know if it's any longer in print, but you can find eBay copies reasonably easy enough if you look hard enough. And one that, I mean, there's a few which sort of aren't as obvious on the surface, but Pluto by Naoki Urasawa. That's basically an Astro Boy story done in the style of like a mystery thriller, you know, like a serious kind of political mystery conspiracy thriller. And that's not one I've had a chance to read yet, unfortunately. That's the author of 20th Century Boys and Monster and a whole bunch of wonderful things. He's probably kind of one of the big names in manga right now. Abraxas and the Earthmen. You're familiar with Rick Veitch?
Yes.
Yes. He did an adaptation, kind of in the early 90s for Marvel's Epic imprint, kind of in the style of Metal Herlan, but an adaptation of Herman Melville's Moby Dick.
Oh, okay.
And he sort of recast the ship as this, you know, like a space vessel. And the Ishmael character gets like skinned alive in an early paragraph and gets a new skin. And like the kind of metaphorical things that happen in the book happen kind of literally in the comic. There's these long LSD-fueled spacefaring sequences, and it's absolutely wild. And it does help to be familiar with Moby Dick even in passing, because to see kind of these characters turned on their head in these really bizarre ways is, yeah, just playing on that whole crazy Metal Herlan thing, which is really its own genre, I think, heavy metal kind of. It's like science fiction, but to the extreme. I wouldn't even know what to call it per se, except its own thing. And on the topic of heavy metal, just because it's interesting, check out Robert Rodriguez has put out a call for people to submit their ideas and visual ideas, drawings, sketches, concepts, plots, short films, whatever, for the new heavy metal film.
Okay.
That's yep. been in development hell for a couple of years. Last when I was interested in it, I know Peter Chung was in talks to direct a segment, you know, a whole bunch of well-named actors, Quentin Tarantino, one of directors, I should say, Quentin Tarantino, were all in talks to do segments for an awesome heavy metal movie. The last one of which had most of the Saturday Night Live cast attached to in the 80s. Do you remember that one?
So this is an animated anthology, wasn't it?
Yeah, an animated anthology, and that one was a combination of heavy metal and the Saturday Night Live aesthetic of kind of absurdist humor, like Bill Murray, Eugene Levy, all these well-known Saturday Night Live performers, John Candy, all lent their voices to it. John Candy performed as Richard Corbin's character, Den, who's like this kind of like a Conan character, but then with John Candy's voice, it was kind of hilarious. And one up here, just because I have read the first issue of it, and he's an Australian, you know, Ashley Wood's work.
Yeah.
He did a book with Chris Ryle called Zombies versus Robots.
Ah, of course, yes.
Has this come up on your radar at all?
Yes, now that you mean, yeah, it's called, I think they've done a couple of different series through IDW.
Yeah, through IDW. They did a spin-off recently called Zombies versus Robots versus Amazons. And the plot of this one, I've only got one issue, but it's enough for me to, you know, get the idea. And Ashley Wood's got his own art style. But these scientists open a time travel gateway, and because it's unsafe, they send robots through it. But accidentally, one of the robots brings back a zombie infection, which turns everyone on Earth into a zombie. Except the robots and one little baby they're protecting. And then they concoct a plan to kind of clone her to repopulate the world. And that to me kind of, it's almost like the ultimate realization of this kind of cool versus awesome trope. Because if you think of the Aliens versus Predator movies, which aren't good anyway, but this, you're not interested, you don't care about the human characters. They're just there to die, or they're the goal. You know what I mean? And this, rather than wasting your time making you follow some human character you don't care about, because you're there to see the aliens versus predators, damn it. In this one, it's, you know, the robots versus zombies, and zombies can't infect a robot, and they're protecting a human. It's a nice way to avoid that thing of having to force you to follow a character you don't care about if you're only there for the zombies and the robots. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I mean, an obvious one, and we talked about it last week, really the first League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is a really successful mashup, because it combines that kind of Victorian-era literary characters into a, kind of like a Fantastic Four story, almost. They're basically a super team, And that's another kind of really well-received mashup. And there's so many hard-boiled detective slash something else comics and films, to the point where it'd be crazy to go into them. You were talking about Blade Runner before, and that's the film's just like a, you know, private dick story, but with, you know, science fiction things. And a great one that I love of the kind of hardboiled thing, and it's one that I think works really well, is kind of, it's that genre meeting like an art comic. Art Spiegelman did a kind of like a formalist experimentation kind of with his title Ace Hole Midget Detective. And it's this like midget detective, as the title suggests, but he's on this kind of a typical kind of hardball detective thing. But all the characters are kind of different aspects of modern art. So there's like a Picasso-esque woman who fills up half the page and is three times bigger than, you know, like those kind of things. Yeah. The bad guys, like The Scream, you know, that famous painting. Those kind of things are interesting, taking a well-known genre and taking it into a different dimension, not just mashing it with another genre, you know.
I guess Elephant Men could be like that. That's kind of a hardboiled detective with a sci-fi dystopian future with an anthropomorphic.
We could be here forever. I mean, unless if you have any other final examples.
One more. This is an obvious one. Pirates versus Ninjas. It's been around as a Xbox Live game for a while, and there's also even a Pirates versus Ninjas Dodgeball. But Antarctic Press published two trade paperbacks, four issues in the first one, which is just called Pirates vs. Ninjas, came out 2007, followed by Up the Ante, which had pirates, ninjas, and Vikings in it.
Oh, my.
But this first one, I've just got the kind of manga digest, which so it's just black and white and reprints it in a smaller format. The story is by Fred Perry, Wes Hartman, and Joe White, and the art, which is pretty awesome, is by Craig Baby R. And it's very manga, it's very kind of all ages, and it's quite fun and quite humorous in places. Mm-hmm. The story is quite simple, and there's action all throughout it, but basically they've kidnapped this guy called Kenny S. P. Montague. He's like a smart guy because he has glasses and a waistcoat, so I know he's smart. He's like an expert at reading maps. And he knows the clues to this ancient treasure, which were left by this immortal pirate called Shadowbeard. And he was a pirate chosen by the god Poseidon as the herald on Earth. And he said, here you go, have my trident and go nuts. And he did go nuts, and then he got stripped of his powers. And then he fought this guy called Rhaegar, who was the founder of the ninja clan, and he wielded this blade called the Disaster Blade. And then so they have this epic fight, and the story kind of follows it up in the back in the days of pirates and ninjas. So obviously it's you know, set in the 1800s or 1700s or something like that. The ninjas kidnap Montague from the pirates, who were using him to find where these two gods on Earth left their treasure. And they're basically the pirates trying to reclaim him. So there's really great battles. There's like these ninjas use hang gliders that look like dragons.
Mm-hmm.
The ninjas fighting on a pirate ship, and they're all crowded. The pirates get drunk and don't feel the ninja stars getting thrown at them. Captain Mako, who of course has a eye patch, he says great lines like, "Pluck those pajama wearing butter sops out of the sky." It's all very stereotypical in the way that the dialogue is spoken, but it's very, yeah, it's very manga. Just, you know, speed lines everywhere, and there's a lot of character to these pages. Yeah, I actually quite enjoyed this more than the title would have led me to believe. So that's available now. Again, it's probably one of those things that's hard to find because Antarctic Press don't do a whole lot of books and kind of get forgotten as a smaller independent publisher. But they do some good work. I've actually got another one of theirs, which I haven't read. It's called Beowulf, which is based, well, you can't...
Beowulf, I remember this one.
Kind of imagine what it's based just by the title.
Yeah, I remember this being solicited and being quite curious about it because the art looked quite striking from what I remember.
Yeah, it's quite, again, it's black and white. It's a original graphic novel in the Manga Digest form. It's quite sketchy, not that manga-ish, but a lot of heavy blacks and quite inky in places. And that's written and drawn by David Hutchison. And, yeah, it basically adapts the Beowulf poem and also the film starring Angelina Jolie, CGI film.
And Antonio Banderas in 13th Warrior, which is the same plot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I thought that was based on a book by...
it is. Michael Crichton kind of... that book, Eaters of the Dead, which turned into 13th Warrior, it's kind of the story of Beowulf told through the perspective of this Islamic kind of wanderer guy who has a different first account. So, like, the dragon instead is like a line of dudes who are wearing particular kind of scaly armor, you know, that kind of thing. So but you wouldn't even notice it on the first run through because the characters' names are different, but it's there. Okay. So Angelina Jolie and Antonio Banderas together again.
So Beowulf, B-I-O, adapts the poem, but in more of a dystopian future, and the character is basically he kind of looks like Edward Scissorhands. And another thing I did, so I haven't read it, but
yeah.
It's out. Another obvious one is Wizard of Oz that gets adapted into all manner of manga and sci-fi and horror, and you know that Alice in Wonderland as well as the other one.
Those man,
get adapted a lot into pretty much every genre you can imagine.
It's what do you think it is about this? I mean, it seems like these days this whole mashup genre or something versus something, or you know, just mixing these tropes together, bashing them together, even if they don't make sense. What do you think it is about that seems to be why it seems to be coming up more now than more than ever? I mean, it's always been around, but yeah.
I think it's an easy, it's like when screenwriters, when they try and tell you how to pitch a movie, to give them the elevator pitch, you know, it's like... It's Godfather meets the Golden Girls. It's Jaws meets Pinocchio. It's like, so if you could kind of take these two things, two reference points that people have straight away, it's almost like they're familiar with it.
Yeah.
That's why studios keep giving us prequels and sequels. And I guess if we have like something like, Alice in Wonderland, we're familiar with that. Like, wow, I can picture, you know, that as a Mad Max style. And Alice in Wonderland running around with a sword, cutting off zombie Cheshire cats. I don't know. But like anything, it can work and it cannot work. But I think for all the examples we've listed today, there's some pretty good ones out there. And for the most part, they seem to do the trick.
Yeah, it's the ones that seem to Yeah, the ones which seem to be made of a spirit of this will be so much fun if this happened, you know, not the ones which are like this would sell so many copies of this film, book, you know, comic if we put this in the title, you know, these keywords, Marvel zombies.
If you try and shoehorn it in, it just ends up being awkward.
Yeah.
And if you take two big ideas and kind of make them work, it's kind of surprising.
I mean, it makes me think of whether it's because of, I mean, these days it's easier now more than ever to just get entertainment, you know, at the click of a button. You don't even have to wait. You don't have to wait for a film to come out. You know what things are going to come out. People are kind of more clued into their pop culture now more than ever, to the point where we're saturated in it. And it's kind of almost logical that you'd start to mash them together. It's almost like watching two films at once because I don't have time. Give me my pirates and my zombies at the same time. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I guess it'll wear out of steam eventually. I'm pretty sure people will hopefully lose interest in these kind of quick buck
things. Pop culture, there's always fads in pop culture. There was zombies, then it was vampires, then it was werewolves, and now it's, you know, singing teenagers in high school. And it's very, pop culture's like fashion, it's very cyclical.
That's true.
Cyclical even.
Yeah, it's just it's interesting with comics because superheroes are the genre. So it's always going to be superheroes meet something else will be the way people are identified as. You know, it's, some writer makes a big splash on a superhero title and it's inevitably because they've injected like another genre into that. So they'll put elements of Lost or something into a superhero thing and you get heroes, you know.
Yeah.
But comics do that as well and it's like people, putting things in a new context just seems new, even if they're old, tired tropes. Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of the writers that are writing superhero comics today come from an independent publishers.
Right.
I guess they bring those sensibilities with them.
True dat.
Yeah. We've covered a lot, but I think it does make me want to go back through my back issue bins and look at the Batman versus Alien versus Predator versus Superman versus Justice League books.
There's money in them. There's gold in them there, Hills. All right. We've milked this topic just the same as these companies have milked these cash cow licensing properties.
Is that a zombie cow?
Do you get blood out of that?
Possibly. Oh, they probably have dried up udders.
That's true. Okay. I don't like zombies at all. Like, I can't even get enjoyment out of talking about them. It's just like... I'm so glad we haven't done an episode on zombies.
Yeah.
Yeah. It won't ever happen, people. I can't bring myself to read, favorite superhero turns into zombie story. It's just so...
The Walking Dead is meant to be awesome. I haven't read much of it.
Each to his own.
All right. Thank you for joining us, as always. If you have any ideas or anything that we missed, you can email us at chris@extrasequential.com. Like us and comment on our Facebook page.
Yes.
And check out all our previous posts, all 54 of them, at extrasequential.com.
And I thought I'd just, in spirit of what I mentioned last week, maybe we should just throw a question out to people just regarding this show. What is it about, you know, seeing those two cool words, you know, on a page that might appeal to you more, say, you know, cowboys versus Vikings, when you might not normally pick up just a cowboys comic or just a Vikings comic? You know, what is it about seeing those two together for you that might get you more excited than just the one on its own? I'm just kind of curious what people think on
it's
that.
It's kind of the playground argument, isn't it? I'm a cowboy. I've got a gun. Yeah, but I'm a Viking and I've got a helmet with horns on it.
I can't believe we didn't mention Deadliest Warrior. That TV show where they pitch Deadliest Warriors of All History together and seeing who will win. And then there's like this long sequence where they test the weapons. And so it's basically like a wet dream of people who dig this this mashup genre. That's the show on Discovery Channel, I think.
Yeah, I've seen snippets of that. I think there's even talk of trying to make it into a movie.
There's a video game, like a fighting video game, and that's actually all right.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's pretty appropriate for that, you know.
True.
Yeah. But so that's that topic done. Yeah, email Chris with so forth. Facebook, music for the show is at purgeaudit.com. And next week, if you have any suggestions for, well, we should just announce the topic now because it is Read a Comic in Public Day or whatever it's called.
Yes, International Read Comics and Public Day.
Yeah. I wanted to ask the question, what comic would you be less than enthusiastic to see people, to have people see you read, whether it's something you're like just a little bit embarrassed by, or you're maybe, you think, oh, it'll take too long to explain. I'm not a pervert. It's just this, you know. So a comic you might hide from your parents, for example, or you would never pull out on the train to read in public. I'm curious what, and you genuinely enjoy, not something you hate. I can think of a fair few myself. Comics that I enjoy, but I'd be embarrassed to tell people about.
I always, because I always look at the previous catalogue on the train whenever I get it, and sometimes there's like...
Which blade on the cover?
Because there's like dodgy, scantily clad, even the toys or whatever, there's freaky stuff there. August 28th, so that's next week, is International Read Comics and Public Day, by the way. It's been going for a few years now, so August 28th. This year, so please do so, and the idea is to take photos of yourself and kind of put them out there.
All right, folks, you'll hear from us next week. Thanks a lot for chatting to me, Chris.
Anytime. Thanks also to you, Miladin, and thanks for listening, everybody, and have a wonderful week.
See ya.
Bye-bye.